Here's Marlanka again, and today we will read from Sri Aurobindo's essays, Divine and Human, on Original Thinking. The attitude of mankind towards originality of opinion is marked by a natural hesitation and inconsistency. Admired for its rarity, brilliancy, and potency, yet in practice and for the same qualities it is more generally dreaded, ridiculed, or feared. There is no doubt that it tends to disturb what is established. Therefore, tamasic men and tamasic states of society take especial pains to discourage independence of opinion. Their watchword is authority. Few societies have been so tamasic, so full of inertia and contentment in increasing narrowness as Indian society in later times. Few have been so eager to preserve themselves in inertia. Few, therefore, have attached so great an importance to authority. Every detail of our life has been fixed for us by Shastra and custom. Every detail of our thought by Scripture and its commentators. But much oftener by the commentators than by Scripture. Only in one field, that of individual spiritual experience, have we cherished the ancient freedom and originality out of which our past greatness sprang. It is from some new movement in this inexhaustible source that every fresh impulse and rejuvenated strength has arisen. Otherwise, we should have long ago have been in the grave where dead nations lie, with Greece and Rome of the Caesars, with Esarhaddon and the Chosroes. You will often hear it said that it was the forms of Hinduism which have given us so much national vitality. I think, rather, it was its spirit. I'm inclined to give more credit for the secular miracle of our national survival to Shankara, Ramanuja, Nanak, and Kabir, Guru Govind, Chaitanya, Ramdas, and Tukaram, than to Raghunandan and the Pandits of Nadia and Bhatpara. Well, the result of this well-meaning bondage has been an increasing impoverishment of the Indian intellect, once the most gigantic and original in the world. Hence, a certain incapacity, atrophy, impotence have marked our later activities, even at their best. The most striking instance is our continued helplessness in the face of the new conditions and new knowledge imposed on us by recent European contact. We have tried to assimilate, we have tried to reject, we have tried to select, but we have not been able to do any of these things successfully. Successful assimilation depends on mastery. But we have not mastered European conditions and knowledge. Rather, we have been seized, subjected, and enslaved by them. Successful rejection is possible only if we have intelligent possession of that which we wish to keep. Our rejection, too, must be an intelligent rejection. We must reject because we have understood, not because we have failed to understand. But our Hinduism, our old culture, are precisely the possessions we have cherished with the least intelligence. Throughout the whole range of our life, we do things without knowing why we do them. And we believe things without knowing why we believe them. We assert things without knowing what right we have to assert them. Or, at most, it is because some book or some Brahmin enjoins it, because Shankara thinks so, or because someone has so interpreted something that he asserts to be a fundamental scripture of our religion. Nothing is our own, nothing native to our intelligence. All is derived. As little have we understood the new knowledge. We have only understood what the Europeans want us to think about themselves and their modern civilization. Our English culture, if culture it can be called, has increased tenfold the evil of our dependence instead of remedying it. More even than the other two processes, successful selection requires the independent play of intellect. If we merely receive new ideas and institutions in the light in which they are presented to us, we shall, instead of selecting, imitate blindly, foolishly, and inappropriately. If we receive them in the light given by our previous knowledge, which was on so many points nil, we shall as blindly and foolishly reject. Selection demands that we should see things not as the foreigner sees them or as the orthodox pandit sees them, but as they are in themselves. But we have selected at random. We have rejected at random. We have not known how to choose, how to assimilate. Well, in the upshot, we have merely suffered the European impact, overborne at points, crassly resisting at others, and altogether miserable, enslaved by our environments, able neither to perish nor to survive. We preserve indeed a certain ingenuity and subtlety. We can imitate with an appearance of brightness. We can play plausibly, even brilliantly, with the minutiae of a subject. But we failed to think usefully. We fail to master the life and heart of things. Yet it is only by mastering the life and heart of things that we can hope, as a nation, to survive. How shall we recover our lost intellectual freedom and elasticity? By reversing, for a time at least, the process by which we lost it, by liberating our minds in all subjects from the thraldom to authority. That's not what reformers in the Anglicized require of us. They ask indeed to abandon authority, to revolt against custom and superstition, to have free and enlightened minds. But they mean, by these sounding recommendations, that we should renounce the authority of Sayana for the authority of Max Müller, the monism of Shankara for the monism of Haeckel, the written Shastra for the unwritten law of European social opinion, the dogmatism of Brahman pandits for the dogmatism of European scientists, thinkers, and scholars. Such a foolish exchange of servitude can receive the assent of no self-respecting mind. Let us break our chains, venerable as they are, but let it be in order to be free, in the name of truth. It would be a poor bargain to exchange our old Indian illuminations, however dark they may have grown to us, for a derivative European enlightenment, or replace the superstitions of popular Hinduism by the superstitions of material science. We will stop here for today and continue next time. Sri Aurobindo's essays, Divine and Human. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, that's it.
Oui, vous écoutez Auroville Radio from Auroville, la ville internationale in India.